were talking about you were training the dogs.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, how did that team turn out?
That team turned out real good. Well, I never got through with them yet. That fall we went out to the camp where I was down here. It was about 22 miles. We went down, and then I had one little girl already at that time. And then I started to fish for them there too. And I started to fish for them there, and then the pups were big enough then. They were 3 months old at that time, and then I couldn't get away from them anymore then, like I told them. So I turned the mother loose, and the mother took care of it from there. He used to go out in the woods and stay out in the woods all day long. I didn't know where he'd been wandering around with those pups. And she started training those pups. She started training her pups, you know. Come back in the evening, and then she all tucked out. You know, I don't feed them 3 times a day anymore. You know, I feed them in the morning and then at night, that's all. So then the season, trapping season opened. Well, I had no sled because that was my first dog team I had, and I didn't know how to make sled. But my dad told me how to make sled, you know. But he never did make sled for me. And so he told me what kind of birds to get to make sled. So I just started to use it, you know. When I have to use it, you know, I had a family, and then I had to do it for myself then. So I used to go out every day and cut birch and bring home a birch. And pretty soon, just about in October, I guess, I got everything all ready to put together the sled. Well, November is our trapping season open, you know, and then it closed in end of February or March, end of March. The trapping season was closed then. And so I went out with my brother-in-laws. I didn't use my dogs because I figured they were too young. Well, they were 4 months old, they were ready to hook up. But I didn't want to lose any one of those dogs, you know, so I just go on foot with them. But they had 9 dogs of their own. But me, I had just those two older dogs and the pups, you know, 6 pups. And you can easily cripple a dog, you know, if you go on the clear ice, because they're scared of ice, on the ice, you know. Mostly it's blown down at 22 miles all the time, and just as fast as the snow comes down, it just blows away, you know, and there's nothing but just a clear ice out there, and even a human being could get hurt, you know, on the ice. Therefore, I didn't want to use my pups, so I just went with them on foot, you know, and we trapped on about 16 miles below 22 miles. And then I'd start out in the morning. Sometimes they never catch me up, you know. As long as there was a little snow on the ground, I don't think anybody would keep up with me anyhow, even with dog team. Because the further I used to run, the more I used to like it. Seems like I'm just pretty light, you know. I could just almost float in the air the way I feel if I started running. And we used to start out in the morning, go down to our 16-mile camp, quite a ways out. They'd never catch me up, even with their 9 dogs, you know. And so, sometimes they offer me a ride if they catch me up. I said, no, I'd rather walk. I'd rather run or walk. And
so how many miles would you walk a day?
As long as there was little snow on the ground, I could run 40 or 50 miles a day. I could run all the way to Nolada at that time, in those days, in my young days. I used to walk up there. In fact, I ran all the way from here to up here to about 18 miles one time. Maybe Mr. Callan, you ask Mr. Callan. Mr. Callan, this was at Christmas time, like the way I told you, you know, people all go up there for a Christmas holiday. And they were here at that time, and they always go up for every Christmas holiday too, you know, him and his wife. No, you start. I start out here at 8 o'clock in the morning, one morning, just before Christmas. I think it was on the 23rd. Either 23rd or 22nd, I started walking. And I was just about to cross the river, then the first bell rang for the school. You know, yeah, it was on 23rd. And then from there, I not know what. I started keeping my time. I was running along all the way up to 12 mile. I never stopped running. Pretty soon I caught up a dog team. Then I passed it. And then I didn't know who it was, you know. I didn't even look who it was. Then I catch up another dog team. That's 12 miles up here. Then I pass it. I run all the way. And then up there at 18 miles, there was lots of dog teams there. I caught them up and I didn't take no lunch. You know, I was depending on these guys to give me even a mouthful or tea, you know, to make the rest of the way up. So anyway, Edgar Cullen is my cousin. He's my second cousin, you know. He offered me a tea and some sandwich. And then after I eat my sandwich and tea and I just left. It must have been about 30 or 35 below. And all I had was just a woolen shirt on, you know, and gloves. But I couldn't bend around anymore because I was sweating so much, you know. And I didn't want to thaw out, so I ate my sandwich and then I just left. And I was carrying, all I was just carrying was just my snowshoes. And then after we left that 18 mile, you know, the trail goes across and then over on the other side. And well, I had a chance to be ahead of them. So I went on the hillside all the way behind the island. And then I...
And rode 4 miles.
Yeah, I got on the sleigh and then I couldn't move because my clothes were all frosted up, you know, from sweating all day. So I told this guy, I got to walk. I said, I cannot sit on the sleigh. I might get too cold this next 2 miles, I said. So I started running again. I ran all the way into Nulada there, from there, you know. And gee, there was a dance, and I couldn't stay away from a dance. I had to go to that dance. We must have got up there about 4 o'clock. And after I got up there, I took a nap. I took a nap for about 2 hours. And then I got up and then started in dancing. Gee, I danced all night. I don't know what time I quit, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I guess. Those days we used to have live music, you know. They had a violin and guitar. And there was a lot of guys that know how to instrument up there, like guitar and violin. They just take turns, you know, to play for the dance. And as long as it was like that, no drinking. And everybody was just enjoying themselves. And then the dance would last till about, sometimes it used to last till 5 o'clock in the morning, 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Right now it's anything the young kids doing right now, teenagers or those young guys somewhere in the 20s or 25, seems like they gotta have a drink to do something, to enjoy themselves. I cannot see the point to that yet. I never drank all my life, but I still enjoy myself, I think, better than the young fellas that drink. I think I enjoy myself better than them, because I know what's going on all the time. You know, and I know what I'm doing all the time. And most of the time is... The young guys would get drunk and they didn't know what they're doing. They didn't know what they go 36 miles for or 40 miles or go to Galena. you know, if there's some kind of celebration up there, they're drunk before they say anything. Therefore, they just spent maybe $100 or $150 there for nothing, you know. They just all on drink, and then they get drunk up there, and then I come and ask you the next morning what was going on last night, you know. I tell that to my boy. All my boys drink, but me and my wife, we never drank all our life, you know, because I love my family, and so is my wife, and we thought it would be better if we try to teach them the right way, you know, as they were growing up. I tell my boys that a lot of times. I said, I work hard all my life in county, you kids, and I just try to grow up healthy and strong. And I never brought any liquor in this house for you to take or taste. You learn that from other people. All what I bring in here is something that's good for your system, that'll make you healthy. And my wife always tell them, my wife is a little bit stricter than me to our kids, you know. But me, sometimes I kind of hoping for the best, I guess, you know. So if I tell my boys, I said, if as long as you're trying to help yourself, I said, I've been working all my life. I've been working for this district school, and I said that I had little money, and I spent my last dollar. If you're trying to help yourself, trying to make something out of yourself, you know. But if you go out and drink and do like other guys that are doing, I said, you all, if you went to high school, went through high school, graduate, where all that going to? It's just all going down the drain. There's only one, my oldest daughter, he was 11 years old, you know, when he was taken out of the school. It was BIA school here. In fact, there was two of them that was picked out from BIA school. And she was 11 years old when she was picked out to go to Copper Valley School. That used to be a Catholic school down on Copper Center. And the first year it opened up, they were picking out the best students that's going to learn. Well, I sent my daughter down there. I had to pay his fare and tuition, you know, all that winter. The second year, he went over there again. Third year, she went there again. She graduated from grade school there, and she said she's going to be a nurse. Ever since she started going to that school, you know. I said, okay, I said, I'll do anything for you, Margaret. I said, as long as you're trying to help yourself. And she did, you know. She went to school there for the next 4 years and graduated from high school. And then from there, she went to college in Spokane, Sacred Heart of Spokane. And just to show her that the respect that we had for her, we never miss her graduation. Every time she graduated from grade school, high school, she graduated from college, and one of us had to be there. So I sent my wife down to Spokane, you know, to attend to her graduation. Well, Margaret, I told her, once you graduate from that nursing school in Spokane, you're going to come back to Alaska and you're going to help your own people. That's what I want, I said. I said, you don't have to pay me back the money that I spent on you. I'm just proud of you that you're a nurse now. So she went to work there in Salem, Oregon for a year, and then she came back to Anchorage. She worked there for another year. Then she got to Tanana, and then she started work in Tanana. And then she ran into this doctor up there, Dr. Kamik. Then they got married, and now she's got a job in Fairbanks, and you got a really nice home up there right now, you know. They got two little boys. She was just down here last month staying staying with us. And I always explain to my younger kids that, you know, I said, you see what your sister Margaret did for herself? She said she is going to be a nurse ever since she was 11 years old. And that's what she is right now. And anyone of you try to do that for yourself, I said, I'm willing to help you. If I don't have the money, I said, there'll be some organization that will help you to do it. I said, as long as you're trying to help yourself, even the BIA will come in and help you. I seen it before. I told them, you know, I said, anybody that tried to help themselves, I said, there won't nobody that won't let them go by, any organization. I said, they'll be in there trying to help them. It's just so long as they're trying to make something out of themselves. You know. Now, one of my daughters down in Anchorage, she's a dentist assistant. She's been working there for 8 or 9 years now. Julia. And my third daughter is here now, is married to another white guy. Well, all my daughters are married to all white guys. Well, she said she was going to be a secretary, you know, when she quit school. Betty Griffin. She said she's going to be a secretary. I mean, before she graduated from a high school, and then her first job was to start work for the youth corps, you know, neighborhood youth corps. She started to save her money and they're going to buy tarp rider. Well, when he got through, well, she didn't have enough money to buy the tarp rider, you know, and I asked her, what kind you want to get? She said, you want to get electric. I said, okay. I said, whatever money you make, you can spend on the tarp rider, and then I'll pay the rest. And he said, okay. Well, that fall she ordered one, and then she took it along with her into the school. You know. Well, last year she worked for the independent school in Galena as a secretary there all last winter. And I'm hoping she might get a job here as a secretary for the Oikon District School too now here. Since she's experience of it and pretty well familiar with a secretary job, you know.
Well, what are your sons doing? And what are their names?
My oldest son is Francis. Right now he's coaching the... He had a 2 years degree in college, and I thought he was going to be another smart one when in a family. And I keep telling him, but he was smarter than me because he went to college. You know, I tell my boy Francis, I wouldn't believe you unless you started to show me that what you use your education for. I said, you're still under my roof, and I'm still feeding you. I said, when you start to use your knowledge, then I'll believe you. You know, whatever he learned. Well, he went on a pipeline, and he was a mechanic there for a while, till there was no more job for him. Then he came back, and then there was no more job available for him, so he started to stay in town. And then last year he got a job as a coach for the student, you know, basketball coach. Right now he's working for a city as recreation supervising for the city. So he's doing pretty good right now. But my next older boy is just absolutely nothing right now. He went to the service and then he learned how to drink. That's all he did in the service. Well, I told my boys that too. I said that's your second choice is the service. As long as you graduate from high school, you go to the service, and then you got your choice. You can go to the military, and then they probably put you a engineer, or if you want to go to the Navy, it's your choice. And any place you go to that in the Army, I said, they'll ask you what you want to take up. It's just from my experience that I learned from different white guys, you know. And it's your second choice to go back to school. You can make anything out of yourself, whatever you want. It's not learn how to drink, I told him. You know. But no, that's the first thing he learned, was learn. Because they go to the PX and there the beer was cheap there, you know. And as long as the beer was cheap there, he go there and get drunk on in at the PX or the officers' club. I never was in the Army. I tell him, if I was in the Army, I said that I would not be pushing that broom up there in the school. I'd be someplace else, and that I'd been better off than what I am right now, I told him. You know. Because I know what my dad used to tell me when I was growing up. My mother. In fact, my mother told me the last words she said, "Don't ever drink, my son." He says, you know, before she died. I tell my kids, I said, that's the respect I got from my mother. I said, that's one thing I don't think I'll ever do is drink. Because I cannot break the word that my mother gave me, not to drink. You know?
How old were you when she died?
My mother died just about 6 years ago. So I was in 49 at that time, 48 or 49 then.
Well, what was your parents' name? Your mother's name and father's name?
My father's name was George, first name George Semekin was his last name. My mother's name was Lizzie.
Were they born and raised here?
No, my mother just said, it's good that I hear some, I mean, questions like that, you know, those things that I forgot to tell you. Okay, my mother was from out at Unalakleet Way. It's about 16 miles from Unalakleet, this way from Unalakleet. It used to be a native village there. The village they call a reindeer station right now, in English, but in native they used to call it Knakoinokot. I don't know what that means, but that's just the name of the village, you know. Well, my mother was raised there. His original parents came from there, you know. So therefore, my mother is a part Eskimo, but I don't know how much Eskimo she got in her.
Do you know what your parents?
No, I don't know her parents' name. She didn't know herself either what was her parents' name was, you know. Well, he said he was pretty small when his father died, you know. But his mother was, she was pretty big when her mother died, he said. And then my father came from down the river about 70 miles below here, I think.
What was the name of that place?
They call it the Bear Creek right now, you know, in English. But in native name, I gotta find that name. Tislaqaqat. That's the name of it in native. It's something like, similar like saying bear, you know. So they call it Bear Creek in English, that place now. But somehow, you know, this, like I told you, there was only a trail through here to Unalakleet. And only the place they had the store at that time, before this store came up, was down at Unalakleet and St. Michael. The NC Company had stores in those places, you know. And they're big outfits, so they had stores in And a lot of people used to get their groceries from down at Unlickley. And the most dogs the father would use with five dogs is they say in those days, you know, to get their groceries from out there. Someone would use three dogs, four. Some of them just go pulling a sleigh or toboggan on foot during the winter. So I think that's how my mother and my father got to, well, most of our people came from this place that what I call Reindeer Station out here. The village of Caltech is not originally really an old village, like, you know. It's just a people from a different surrounding places that they were made the village.
What places did they come from besides?
Okay, there were some people came from an Oak River over on the other side of the Yukon, you know, there's an Oak River. There's some people came from around there, and out, like I said, from down Bear Creek or down further, there were some people came here, and some from out there on at the Reindeer Station. My uncle and my father, my aunt.
What were their names, your uncle and your...
My uncle was, they called him Slim Reuben. He came from there. And I don't know how Stanley, old man Stanley, was related to me. He came from there. John Sierowski, he came from out there. That's the only one that I have known that came from out there, from out at Reindeer Station, called, they call it Kanakoinokon. In those days, I asked those Eskimos that didn't know that place here. I said, I'm part of Eskimo too, and I listened to my mother, and I said, how come I can say it good, I tell them, you know. But I don't know how much Eskimo blood my mother had. In fact, we had some relation out there before, but they had all gone now. Therefore, my parents used to go out there every, just about in March, used to go out there with dog team. And I used to go with them. So I know practically all the people in Unlickleet, and all the people know me there at Unlickleet too.
Do you remember much about when you used to go with mother and father?
No, I didn't know very much because I was just a little boy then, you know. Eskimo people didn't like Indians in those days too much, you know, because they were, anytime they used, before that they used to go out on the hills hunting bear or caribou, you know, during the summer, and they would kill one another in Canada, you know, and then therefore Eskimos and the Indians didn't like each other too much. So I heard the story like that before, and I was kind of scared of the Eskimos too. But now they're my best friends. I can go out there and I could stay with them for a week or a month, you know. Now, and they're my good friends. In fact, I call them my relation now. You know?
Well, how did that work out? If people were scared, it sounded like they went there an awful lot to buy stuff. So.
Yeah, what they used to, people even from up the river, like Nularo, Kayakuk, all the way first hand, they say they used to go out and get some groceries from Unlickleet. There was no river boats in those days. That was quite a while back, though.
When people would go all the way over there for groceries?
I don't know when would that be. It must be before in 1800. I mean, somewhere in 1800 maybe. It must have been about 1880 or 70 at that time. Because the river boats started to come They came up the river first. Now, St. Michael is only 60 miles below Unalaklik Creek. Well, that's only the place the ship used to dock, because it was too shallow at Unalaklik Creek. You know, it's just in northern bay there. So they used to dock at St. Michael, and all the groceries from Seattle would come to there, you know. And now later on, they started to talk about this railroad across from Yenana to Anchorage and then Seward. And then all those rails came up the river, they say, that the railroad that's going to Seward from Fairbanks to Seward now.
So that's when things started coming down.
Then after they put in that railroad, then things started to come down the river instead of coming up the river.
But in the early 1900s, people were still going over to the coast to buy groceries.
No, there was no more. Then they started to have those gold mines, you know. And then a lot of them came to Alaska. That's how a lot of white people came to Alaska.
So did your parents just go over there to visit when they used to take you?
Yeah, I used to go there mostly for a visit, you know, because a lot of people know them, and then they'd give them some of their Eskimo food. Well, my mother had to have some Eskimo food mostly all time. And I was raised and grew up on it too. And right now, I don't really care for much of Eskimo food, but I still got some, you know. Like seal oil or seal meat. I still got some in my refrigerator right now, just in case I might. If I don't have it, then I'll want it. You know, I'll want it every day. But as long as I got it here, then I don't think about it, you know. Now, last fall, there was some Eskimos came over from Unalaklik, and then they brought a whole seal for me. I got a friend down here at Unalaklik. He said, "Good one, I brought you a seal. You can do whatever you want to do with it, you know." He said, "All cut up in a bucket." He said, "You can pass it around or you can have it all." He said, "Well, I think that's too much for me. As long as I got a little bit," I said, I'm all right. But I could pass out the rest, I said. So I just went around town, you know, and then give some to different people. And a lot of people like seal oil or whale blubber very much in here. Well, if there's whale blubber, I'll eat that every day as long as I got it, you know. But seal oil, I don't go, too much on it, you know. But if there's a cooked blubber, I could eat that for breakfast or supper.
Well, did people do a lot of trading while you were young?
They were doing a lot of trading in those days too. Like my parents would go over there and they'd have some few beaver skins or marten skins or whatever they don't sell to the store, you know. The Unalaklik people or wolverine skin, they used to be really good market for wolverine skins in Unalaklik. You can almost get a young girl for a you can almost get a young girl for a wolverine hide. Yeah, that's how much they want the wolverine skin over there. In those days, I mean, you know.
Well, do you remember what it would be like when people would go over there and trade things? You know, would there be like a party? Would a lot of people go at one time?
No. Just few people would go over there. Like, if we go over there, just probably just me and my dad and my mother. But some people would do the same thing. About three or four in a pair would go over there, you know.
Well, so you said your father was from that place called Reindeer Station.
No, my mother.
Oh, your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they call that Reindeer Station?
I think they had a herd of reindeer there before, you know. When I was a kid, when I was about 8 or 9 years old. They used to bring a herd of reindeer over because there was no moose in this area, no caribou. So the Unalakleet had quite a bit of reindeer at that time. You know, they had big herd of reindeer there. Practically all the Unalakleet people had different herd of their own. And then if this trader from here or Nulato wants some reindeer, they just herd it over from Unalakleet, but they just herd it little at a time, you know. And then they used to have a camp right back here, about a mile back here. They used to corral those reindeers when I was a little boy.
Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I seen it. And they corralled them back there, and then they just killed them off back there, and then they butchered them. And then they sell the meat to the store or to the traders in Nulato or down here. And then they'd give us all the extras, you know, like the reindeer head and whatever they cannot sell, you know, like the reindeer head or the hoofs or the skin. They used to give away to the natives. But they used to sell the meat to the white guys, like if there was a white guy trader here.
Well, what was the place your father grew up like? Did he ever talk to you about that? What it was like before people left there?
No, he said there was a lot of caribou at that time anyhow. And then there was just a little creek. Most of the old-timers, you know, they never looked for a village like this to live in, you know, because there was no job. There was no job of no kind, no income. Only the income that would be like in Caltech, it would be just the teacher and the city, the store owner, you know, postmaster. Of course, the postmaster owns the store and the post office, and the teacher would be here, you know. There's probably only one single teacher, and that would be only the income that would be in the Caltech, you know. So like these people, they didn't have no village down at the Bear Creek. Maybe it was just only one or two families that was living there, because it was a good area for a caribou or a good place for fishing. But you stop right there. You know, like there's another creek down here called Stink Creek. It's a good place for fishing. Good place for a grayling in the fall time. Therefore, people would gather up there in fall time and then put in fish trap there and put away enough fish for the winter. And like 22 miles, this cayuse would come out in there. It'd be the same way. You know, these people would get there and then put in fish trap or put in fish net and put enough fish away for the winter there, you know. Well, so they had their camps around there in Condat, and they used to stay around there year-round practically because they didn't have no boats.
What kind of houses would they stay in? Was it tents?
No, they used to have a regular sod houses. Really, a mud house, but I think that was the best kind of house there was, is those mud houses.
What did you warmer. Call those houses? What did they call them? What's the
name
for that kind of house?
A native used to call it a nachaluyach. You know, it's just a little, maybe a 10 by 12, or 10 by 12 would be pretty big, or maybe 8 by 10, or 10 by 10. Probably about 10 by 10 is about I'd say the average size, you know. And then you'd have a fire right in the middle of the place, and didn't have no stove, just a chimney up. You
know. Just a stove pipe or just a hole?
Just a hole on the roof. You know, they don't have no chimney. I didn't talk about chimney. It's just a hole in the roof, and then all the smoke would go through there, you know, what draws it up, you know. But they said that used to be the warmest house there used to be. It was even better than these log cabins we got, you know, because they're dig down about 4 feet in the ground, you know.
Did you ever see a house like that?
I never seen a house like that, but I seen some old ones that were like that when I was about 15 or 16 years old. That was already caving in, though, the one I seen.
And that's the kind your father lived in?
That's the kind our parents were living
in. Too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well?
You know, we talked about hunting for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And this afternoon you said that you were going to take some time off and go hunting.
Yeah, that's your time. Not an hour yet, I believe.
Okay. Well, maybe you could just tell something about, you know, what you have to do to get ready to go hunting today. I mean, like, you have to get permission to take day off and get things together.
Yeah, that was my first thing to ask my boss, if I could get a day off. But I have to get ready for next couple of days for the hunting season. I mean, for hunting. Like, I got to take enough gas and enough food. I usually doesn't take enough food because I figure I'd survive off the country. You know, I'm an old timer too. And if I go out, I don't think I'll starve if I go out. As long as there's little game in the area, you know, that I could survive on. And so therefore, if I go out alone, like the way I said to my family this morning, I said, all my boys were working, you know, so I told them, I'm going to go out. I said, I don't have to be anybody to go out with me. But my family don't want me to go out alone. But I tell them, I feel better if I go out alone. I can do whatever I want to do. I said, in fact, maybe I could go sneak up to a moose while he's sleeping, laying down. Because there's nobody that bothers me that's with me, you know. I can take my good old time, and if there's a fresh track, I was learned that from, not from my father, but from my brother-in-law. You know, he'd stop and look if they get to a fresh track. He look at the ground and look at the fresh tracks. He look at the leaves, and he look at the place where a moose has been eating, you know, the willows or the leaves, and he'd go touch them and then break them off, see if it's dry or a day old or an hour old, you know, and the grass the same way. He'd gathered all that up, you know, and then put it all in his mind. He knew how far that moose is. He knew exactly where that moose is. And I learned that from him, but I still cannot use that skill, though. I've tried a lot of times. But I hunt with my brother-in-law, and he was doing that before, and I tried to learn it as much as I could, you know. I even took my time and stayed quite a ways behind him. And just wanted to learn how he hunt. Well, that's good experience. Things like that, you know, you could pick up from another guy, you know. Well, that's where I learned most of my things is from experience. I don't learn anything by book. I could tell you that because I went to school for 5 weeks to be a maintenance man in 65 and 66. I went to school for 5 weeks down at Mount Edgecombe. 66 I went for 4 weeks. 9 months I went to school to hold up my job as a maintenance man here. And in that 9 months, whatever I learned, I'm still using it now. You know, I didn't learn that by book. I just learned by experience. I told those guys, our instructor came, different instructor came every week in that the five weeks. and try to explain us to give us a book like that, you know. I said, I cannot learn by that book. I don't know how to read real well. I could read, but I can't understand it. If I do it by hand, I learn it, and it stays with me. Whatever I do, whatever I do by hand. Good one, I think you're right. He said, well, there was some other mate, there was other 14 other maintenance men that went to school with me there, you know. And they agreed with me too. So we done everything by hand. We even took these furnaces apart, light plant apart, electrical wiring. I could do wiring house what I learned in that 5 weeks. And I could do all those things. So at hunting was the same way for me. And, you know, and some books it tells you how to go hunting moose. I've seen quite a few of them, like it was written down black and white in the book, you know, like hunting bear or things like that, you know. Well, I kind of learned that. But I learned the hunting from different guys, from older people. You know, they're hunting bear the same way. You just know exactly what time that bear is going to run away, you know. And never mind, do you think you're going to get closer even though the bear is looking at you? You're not going to get any closer than what in your distance where you see the bear or the bear is looking at you as you see the bear, you know. He's just going to give you another chance to wait there and look at you. Your best time is right now, while he's looking at you. And moose the same way. Moose is seeing you, maybe he sees you from up here to the creek, you know, in the open. He stands there and watch you. He finds out what you are. He don't wait, he's gone right now. And if you're out in the woods and you're hunting where the wind has been whirling around, you know, if there's some wind whirling around. You know, some place are like that in the woods. Okay, that's where I cannot learn. That's where I wanted to learn how to hunt when there's whirling around, when you're real close to the moose. I killed a lot of moose in my life. You know, I never got one that's laying down yet. I only got one moose when I was all alone. And he was still sleeping, and I snuck right up to it, about 20 feet away. He was still sleeping when I got to him. And that's how easy and careful that I have hunt because I was alone. Like if there was somebody with me, I just walk, you know. If I see fresh track here, and then I stop there and look at it maybe, probably for a little while, and I think nothing of it and keep right on going, you know. But now, I seen the fresh tracks, and I started watching my steps real slow. And then I seen this moose just laying down about 20 feet away from me when I saw it. Well, I wasn't looking only for horns or the head, you know, standing up. And my eyes was all over, even behind me, you know, all over. That's how I spot this moose. Well, there's a lot of different times that I go in boat, and if my family is with me, and then my eyes is not in one place. Now I take my kids down in my boat. I got a houseboat down there like yours, you know, you've seen it. Yeah. As soon as they go in the boat, they pick up a book and start in reading. I'd be staring back there, you know. They pick up a book and start in reading that book. They don't know whether they're out hunting or they're just enjoying their ride. And I never do that. As long as I'm in a boat, my eyes is wide open. Even though I don't think I have any business of looking around for snack or driftwood, you know, on the river. Still at that, my eyes is all over. And I spot a lot of animals before my kids even spot it when I'm in a boat. And I don't think there's any one of my kids spot any animal before me.
Well, are you going to travel by boat today?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to travel by boat today.
What are you going to take with you as far as what kind of grub are you going to take with you?
I'm going to take some dry fish. Dry fish is most important thing for me. I can live on dry fish for a week or so just alone, you know. But I'm going to take my canoe too. What is much better right now for hunting, because the lakes are pretty much water in, and you cannot go in the shoes like that, or even any boots like yours, you know, in lakes right now, because of the high water last spring. And I think that's good. Most of the problem is now for the people, you know, because they don't have a canoe, or all they got is just a short knee boots, and they cannot check around the lake very good. Usually, a moose would come out in a lake if he find a good spot. He wouldn't go around a mile-long lake, you know. He'd be just going back in the woods and come out for feeding, you know, back and forth, as long as he's got good feeding out there in that lake. So therefore, you got hit the right time is out there, right spot too.
Are you gonna, do you try to call moose when you
hunt? Well, I never call moose unless I hear a moose calling. Oh, there's another thing that I have learned from a different people. You know, I heard the bull moose calling, but I never heard a cow calling a bull. So I heard different guys say that you call a bull moose different way, you know. Well, I asked him how, so he said it in front of me, and it's supposed to be a secret, because he don't want, there's a lot of people that don't want to pass on their knowledge to other people, how they make their living. Like, I'd say you're a good sower, make good parka, good moccasin, and good gloves. Well, you don't want your knowledge to go around and show other people how you do it, you know. Like, he's a good carpenter, you know, and how to make sleigh, canoe, snowshoes. Well, you don't want to pass it around to other people. That's what they call a superstitious, though. Now, I'd call it superstitious myself. Me, I want to pass out everything I know to a younger guy that's younger than me, especially the school kids, the students. And I have to work with this NYC program for about 6 years. Just the last 2 years, I never worked with them. And those kids, they were real, they want to work with me. And I just love to work with them from 14 to 18 years of 18 or 19 years of age, because I passed all my knowledge to them, you know, whatever I know, and how to move around anything that's heavy. I tell them, you can move around anything that's heavy. You just take your time and think about it,